The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
So where do we begin, my friends? I pick up the paper. I don't read a paper. Richard Johnson, New York Post, page 6. It's one of my favorite columns. Where the headline is, the Obamas are moving into a 9-bedroom mansion in the Kalorama section of Washington. The posh neighborhood of diplomats. I love what's behind closed. Diplomat. Oh, look at that. There's a diplomat. You ever see what the dipsomaniacs in the diplomats' houses? What's behind the closed door in Georgetown? If there was a handy cam in those houses, you wouldn't have to do another reality show for the rest of eternity. The posh neighborhood of diplomats and D.C. old money. Old money. What does old money mean? They're in the drug business before everybody else. That's all. While younger daughter Sasha finishes high school at Sidwell Friends. Well, that's a cheap school. But they've been apparently buying real estate elsewhere, too. According to sources, the Obamas have purchased a house in Rancho Mirage, California, not far from Sunnylands, the former Annenberg Estate, which presidents use as a getaway and which is thought of as the unofficial West Coast Camp David. Rancho Mirage, where Gerald Ford retired, is a top destination for golf, a favorite pastime of President Obama. The Obamas are also set to have bought a holiday getaway in Obama's childhood home state of Hawaii. So he's got now two houses now. Wait a minute. He got a 9-bedroom mansion in D.C. They purchased a house in Rancho Mirage. He bought a holiday home in Hawaii. Wait a minute. So I have a question on the top of my little paper here. Where did the Obamas suddenly get the money to buy three houses? Am I allowed to ask that? How come all the reporters that just went to Trump's tower haven't asked that single question? Wait a minute, where did he get the money to buy the three houses? I don't know. Can anyone explain that to me? I know that they found $175 billion somewhere in the White House to give to Iran so they could develop a nuclear weapon. No one's even asked where that money came from. Where did that money come from? Where did that money come from? Where did that money come from? Where did $175 billion in cash come from? I don't know. Where did the money come from to buy three houses? Well, he didn't buy the three houses. Who bought them then? Who paid for them? Okay, he's doing it what? On the what's he's going to make? And the lecture circuit, maybe. Maybe it's like a mortgage? No, what it usually be is someone bought a house for him as a loan, and he'll smear him back. And he'll pay him like $1 on $1,000, $1 on $1,000. I don't know how this works. I read the Rogues Gallery that has been marching through the Trump Tower. I was stunned. Deadline Hollywood, Dominic Patton. Donald Trump meeting with media brass. Excellent, says Kellyanne Conway update. So I said to him, wait a minute, who's in there? Who's in there? Wolf Blitzer is meeting with Donald Trump? George Step on All of Us? Fox News people who attacked him? I can't believe it. Chuck Upchuck Todd? President Phil Pill Griffin is there? Charlie Rose? Nora O'Donnell? John Dickerson, who all spit on him during the campaign? And I say to myself, wait a minute, maybe I'm reading this wrong. So I say, why is Trump meeting with his enemies, not his friends? I say, oh, no, this is not sour grapes. I don't go anywhere, by the way. If he said to me on a phone, come to the inauguration, I don't know if I'd go. I'll be honest with you. But he hasn't. I'm at a level with you. I told you. I tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. How many times was he on the show saying, when I say the umbrella, I have the umbrella. Oh, don't worry. You keep that umbrella. Well, I have the umbrella. I think I'm not going to be using it. For the inauguration. But why is he meeting with these people who spit on him and disrespected him so? Well, I'm asking myself, why is Trump meeting with his enemies, not his friends? I can figure this one out. It's not that hard to figure out. He's triangulating them. Okay, keep your enemies close. We got it. We all saw The Godfather. Please don't call on that. Don't give me Radio 101. I mean, the lowest prisoner in Rikers Island knows the answer to this question. I keep saying Rikers Island now, like you don't even know what it is. Rikers Island is like a tomb in New York where they put people in there. It's a beyond belief, a medieval prison. It's worse than where they put war heroes who did their job in Iraq and Afghanistan. Worse. We got guys rotting in Fort Leavenworth who are leading lives worse than the worst murderer, awaiting trial in Rikers Island. I haven't seen anyone go out and visit them and release them from the Bastille. Why has there been no statement from any of the greats around Donald Trump that the first thing they're going to do is they're going to revisit all of the people who were jailed for doing their jobs a little too well in Iraq and Afghanistan under Bush and then Obama? How come we haven't heard that? Why is there no amnesty for them? I ask myself. Well, I have a lot of questions I'm asking. I don't have any answers. But again, I'm getting ahead of myself on this day of the Greek, the day of the Greek. I was watching a TV show called The Night Of. Obscure. None of you saw it. One guy will call from New Jersey, who's a shut-in, telling me he knows it's great. But a lot of the scenes, well, John Turturro plays a schleppy lawyer in it who gets a Pakistani Muslim kid as a client who's accused of murder because he goes out with a girl. They get high. Girl's found dead. He didn't do it. Blah, blah, blah. So the kid gets thrown into Rikers Island. It's a series. I've been binge-watching. It's been raining out here. Drinking more wine than I have in the past with the rainy weather. I got to tell you, it's not bad. Found a new Italian wine, a Valpolicella. Knock. I used to love Valpolicella. Most of it became swill that the people in Italy didn't know. They thought people didn't know the difference. But they're competing again. The wine was good. So I'm drinking more wine, as I say, eating a little better, taking care of myself, enjoying watching TV, sitting out the rain, waiting for the show, and here I am. When I see him meeting with the weasels of the left who undermine them, I come to the conclusion that he's very clever and he's meeting with them to triangulate them and get them onto his team. I get it. But that's not the whole picture. I told you he was a social liberal along the way. I told you that if he does nothing except better our national security, secure our borders, deport the illegal aliens in prison, lower our taxes, and I don't mean by 2%. I don't want to hear my federal tax goes from 39.5 to 36. That's not going to please me. That's going to be double talk. When they suddenly sit down the number crunches and say, oh, Mr. President, you can't lower them anymore because we won't have the money. Oh, really? Make sure that Facebook and Microsoft and Google pay their fair share and repatriate their money, then you won't have to screw us anymore. It should be lowered to like 25. I want 25 Fed. He can't do anything about the communist state of California. 15% state tax. Can you believe this? Why doesn't Jerry Brown just make it 25 state? There's only a few people who pay it. Let us all drop dead, right, Jerry? Till eventually have nothing left but illegal aliens. What do you care? So anyway, yeah, taxes, national security. The rest is gravy. And think about what she would have done, I say to myself. Now, that could be a rationalization. I understand that. But it isn't. Because we were in such bad shape under the deceitful one. I want to go back to where I started in radio. And I started in radio in 94, and I built it upon a book called Plato's Republic. Now, this show is called The Savage Nation. It was derived from Plato's Republic. Now, what was Plato's Republic about? First of all, let me tell you what it is. It's an outline of an ideal society. That's all it is. Plato wrote a book on how a state should be ordered. He wrote it thousands of years ago. And I had to read this in high school to show you how far we've fallen. We've gone from Plato's Republic to Donnie Has Two Daddies in just a few short years in America. Instead of reading the greats, which educate you and exercise your mind, we have degenerated the entire nation. Well, I'll get to that a little later. I want to stay pause. So I can't believe it. I was cleaning out books. My old library was moved to another house, and it was all over the house. Everywhere I turned, I didn't know what to do with them. So I went in the carton today, and there it was. Plato's Republic jumped out. So in the midst of disorder, I found order. Because I'd been looking for the book. I couldn't find it last week. So I find the book. Plato talked about what I'm going to talk about 2,700 years ago. He wrote about the ideal society. Now, at least he had a plan on how to order a society. Whether you agree with him or not, he had a plan for government. And he wrote, if the city or nation is the soul of a society, what did this actually say? He wrote about sports, about welfare reform. He invented the field of philosophy. And I was flipping through Plato's Republic, and I have the B. Jowett edition, Master of Balliol College, that old one, Modern Library edition. Remember those? In the old days when they were books? Those crazy old days when people picked up a hardcover book? And I stumbled upon something about the American Music Awards. Plato foresaw the low-life degenerates who would come along in the entertainment business. And he wrote a whole dialogue on artists and musicians and what they would do to a society. He wrote, if amusements become lawless, what they will do to a state. And I'm going to read this to you because it's so important that we go back not only to the beginning of my beginning of radio, but to the beginning of our civilization, Western civilization. I don't care where you came from. I don't care if you climbed out of a third world cesspool. You are living in a Western nation. You came here for the benefits that we created for you. You didn't create Jack. You came here to suck it dry. So don't tell me about your sacred third world basket weaving society. And by the way, let me tell you something else. I spent more time in third world societies than any one of you belly achers would ever imagine. It's not like I'm disrespecting it. I know all about it. I've lived in Fiji, Tonga, Samoa. I've lived in the most obscure island societies you could ever imagine. Places that the effete hipsters can't even imagine exist. I've lived in villages. I've slept on straw mats. I've drank kava kava long into the night. I appreciate the third world, but I don't like living in it. If you don't mind, I prefer indoor plumbing to defecating in a hole in the ground, by the way. I don't like tribal society. I like Western society. So why don't you listen and find out a little bit more, if you're one of the people who don't really know what's going on, to the foundations of Western civilization. So I'm reading what he had to say about how to create a perfect society. And it's written as a dialogue where he's speaking to an interlocutor. And he talks about artists. And he says that when modes of music change, the fundamental laws of the state always change with them. Yes, said Adamantus, and you may add my suffrage to Damon's and your own. Then I said, our guardians must lay the foundations of their fortress in music? Yes, he said, the lawlessness of which you speak too easily steals in. Yes, I replied in the form of amusement, and at first sight it appears harmless. Why, yes, he said, and there is no harm were it not that little by little this spirit of license, finding a home, imperceptibly penetrates into manners and customs, whence issuing with greater force, it invades contracts between man and man, and from contracts goes on to laws and constitutions in utter recklessness, ending at last, Socrates, by an overthrow of all rights, private as well as public. Really? Finding a home penetrates into manners and customs? He's talking about music. Oh, you mean when a rap star rubs his crotch on the stage? Oh, I didn't understand that. When the bling is in the teeth and they rub their pubic area on a stage? Is that what Plato was seeing? Wait a minute. You mean he had that right? Is that true, I said. That is my belief, he replied. Then, as I was saying, our youth should be trained from the first in a stricter system. For if amusements become lawless, and the youths themselves become lawless, they can never grow up into well-conducted and virtuous citizens. And when they have made a good beginning in play, and by the help of music, have gained the habit of good order, then this habit of order, in a manner how unlike the lawless play of the others. So they go on about that. Did I make my point? So you see where I'm coming from? I'm illustrating to you some of the key points of what Plato wrote in the Republic about the ideal society. And one of them was about how artists always mislead people, that they're like a weed. Art has been used to corrupt man going back to Plato. And if you thought that when the election results were in, everything would be over, you were wrong. Immediately there were protests in the streets. They were created by community organizers with people being bussed in to destroy property and create chaos and deliver a picture of true unrest as a result of their unrest. And then, of course, came the artists and celebrities who chimed in on their shows, on stages, on Twitter, whining, crying, and agitating for a different result. Be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Weekend, we all witnessed attempts at making the Trump win illegitimate. Vice President-elect Mike Pence attempted to enjoy a play on Broadway, Hamilton, and was subjected to a lecture by the star of the show after it ended, purposely being embarrassed by the so-called artists. Then on last night's American Music Awards, Trump was ridiculed, even his wife was made fun of, and some acts blatantly compared Trump to the KKK and fascism. So you say, well, we should ignore them. They're just a bunch of dumb celebrities. Well, I'm telling you to ignore these dumb artists at your own peril. You see, art and music has been used for centuries to influence the masses, and many times to see the demise of great societies. I want to read you a piece from Plato, because now is our time where we question where we as a society are going and where we must go if we are to save Western civilization from further destruction. In Plato's Laws, he wrote, "They were men of genius, but they had no perception of what was just and lawful in music. And by composing licentious works and adding to them words as licentious, they have inspired the multitude with lawlessness and boldness and made them fancy that they could judge for themselves about melody and song. In music, there first arose the universal conceit of omniscience and general lawlessness. Freedom came following afterwards, and men, fancying that they knew what they did not know, had no longer any fear, and the absence of fear begets shamelessness. For what is the shamelessness which is so evil a thing but the insolent refusal to regard the opinion of the better by reason of an overdaring sort of liberty?" See, Plato saw art and music as powerful and therefore potentially dangerous. And we saw last night what happens when a group of deranged junkies who have the power of Hollywood behind them and armies of lawyers and PR agents, and the newspapers always support them no matter what they do. You can see what happens to a society. Or you got to take a look at all the faces in the rehab centers. So Plato thought music, along with the other arts, should be part of the curriculum for young students, as it helped influence behavior and character. But he thought they should be controlled at first, only presenting what was commonly accepted as good. But the fact of the matter is, music and art have been used to tear down cultures for millennia. Plato saw it happen in ancient Greece. A case can be made that artistic subversion helped bring down the Roman Empire. And we're seeing it right here in America today. Take a look at the degenerates in the music business. You may like the tunes. I listen to music. But think about the effect it has on people. Think about it. And that's why the left controls the arts. Because by controlling the arts, they cleverly control the minds. FDR knew this way back in the 1930s when he commissioned 20,000 artists to help him sell his Soviet New Deal policies. In this election cycle, musicians were out in full force pushing for Hillary Clinton. The good news is there are many of us out there who are still thinking and not letting these artists influence our minds. The bad news is there are an increasing number of people willing to submit themselves to a life lived in images and song rather than in intellect.
Savage.
So where do we begin, my friends? We go back to the basics of the Savage Nation. I've completed a cycle. You've completed a cycle. It's not that we're exhausted. We want to move on. Now, if every day I'm going to get up and look at the news and say Trump did this, Obama said that, this and that, okay, fine, it's a radio show, but it's not my style. It's not my Earl Grey. It's not even my Jasmine. It's just Lipton tea. You know what I'm saying? That's been around too long in the cabinet. And I don't particularly like tea that's been around too long in a cabinet. I like tea with a pungent aroma. I begin every one of my shows. You ask the guys who work with me, they see me through the Skype screen there, Robert and Jim. Every show, when you hear that opening music, I have my hand on a Bible and I say every day, if I forget it, I get a little off base. I say, wait a minute, where's the Bible? Where's the Bible? Where's the Bible? Sometimes I travel, I don't have it with me. The one with like 50, 60, 70, 80 post-its in it. I put my hand on it like I'm in a court of law, and I say a simple statement. I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God. And it's as though I am on trial. Everyone in talk radio is on trial, and they know it. I don't forget it. I don't know what the next person does. So if I don't come before you willing to examine everything that's going on with an open mind, open heart, I'm not doing my job properly, and I don't think you're going to listen to me as intently as you have. Now, that's a long introduction. I realize that, and you don't know where I'm going with it. But I do. I've completed a long cycle. The cycle was Scorched Earth came out in October. With your help, it became a bestseller. More important than that, the book was used to push Trump over the finish line. That's the most important thing I've ever done in my life. That's number two. Number three was the Hall of Fame Awards last Thursday, which I couldn't attend, but I attended on the air, and I got the glass plaque, whatever. It's nice. It's beautiful. I cherish it. It's right here. It's on my Facebook thing. That's the end of a long cycle. I mean, there's a lot of events that have gone on in my radio life, right? So I don't have to top it every day. I can't get up here every day looking to be Babe Ruth hitting one out of the park. First of all, it can't be done. Second of all, I think you're actually past that point with me. Well, today we go back to the basics, how the show began 20-some-odd years ago. But in order to do that, we have to go back some 2,700 years ago to an ancient Greek philosopher who wrote a book called Plato's The Republic. He talked about the ideal society and how a state should be ordered in this book. I happen to have been lucky to go to Jamaica High School in Queens. I believe I read it in high school. I'm not sure. I think so. And I have my original edition, Modern Library, with many notes in it. I had misplaced the book for years, but this is how I founded my show. It was built upon this concept of what is the ideal society. We never talk about it. Many of us in talk radio just sit here and critic, yap, yap, yap. This is no good. That's no good. Liberals, this. I've done it myself. I understand. But at a certain point, you have to step back and say, wait a minute, what are we bellyaching about? What do we want? What's the ideal society that we're trying to achieve? We never think about it. What is the master plan? Okay, so I write books. I wrote, I'll read you the names. I'm not ashamed of them, proud of them. Scorched Earth, Government Zero, Stop the Coming Civil War were my most recent books. In them, I sort of present what I think is right thinking about what a state should be doing in terms of education, the church, the military, the borders. I write about that. That's a fact that I do. But what is the ultimate goal of a well-ordered state? And how does a state get so off base? So I talked about how musicians destroy societies. I know it's odd to hear since I'm a man who plays a lot of rock and roll, heavy metal, music. Doesn't mean I don't understand what it does to people's minds who are weak. I understand that. And how it can be used to subvert children. And it does, and turns many of them into drug addicts. I know you're laughing, but it's true. And the proof is in the pudding. Just take a look at who's in rehab centers. Okay, so that's one thing we were talking about. But how do we order a state, a perfect state? Well, I don't know that we can, but are we talking about it? We see that Donald Trump, keyword Trump. Oh, he said Trump knows all. I'm sorry. If I say to you that I sit here, and every day I put my hand on the Bible and say, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Do you expect me to sit here like a stooge and do for Trump what people did for Obama in the media? I won't do it. I can't do it. Or I'll just leave radio. You'll never hear from me again. So again, I'm just going not to talk about Trump. I'm talking about the ideal society. What is the ultimate goal of an ideal society? What's the greatest good of an ideal society? Do you know what that is? Well, let's talk about it from the point of view of this ancient Greek book, Plato's Republic. And he calls leaders the guardians of our state. You hear that? Guardians of our state. And he asks, what is the greatest good and what is the greatest evil? You hear? And he says, can there be any greater evil than discord and distraction and plurality where unity ought to reign, or any greater good than the bond of unity? He's writing this 2,700 years ago. And there is unity where there is community of pleasures and pains, where all the citizens are glad or grieved on the same occasions of joy and sorrow. He asks, and the interlocutor says, no doubt. And he says, and there is unity where there is community of pleasures and pains, where all the citizens are glad or grieved on the same occasions of joy and sorrow, question mark. Yes, and where there is no common but only private feeling, a state is disorganized. When you have one half of the world triumphing and the other plunged in grief at the same events happening, at the same events happening to the city or the citizens. Now, that's an interesting statement. So what are we talking about? A fascist dictatorship? Sort of, by the way. I mean, I've read all the criticisms of Plato. Basically, he's laying out the groundwork for a socialist state and B, a fascist state. I know that as well. It doesn't mean I'm not going to read it to you and discuss it. I'm aware of what I'm saying. I see the bigger picture. But it doesn't mean we should not be discussing right now on this radio show, which is heard around the world, with a new administration, what actually are the goals? What is a well-ordered state, which is what I'm doing? We're never going to have all citizens glad or grieved at the same time unless they live in North Korea, where if they don't go along with Fatso's emotions, they shoot them or slave them to death. But that's not the kind of world we want to live in. So he says, it's not the best ordered state in which the greatest number of persons apply the terms mine and not mine in the same way to the same thing. So he's arguing what, for communism? I don't really know. He could be. He's talking about common feelings in the ideal state. He says, then when any one of the citizens experiences any good or evil, the whole state will make his case their own and will either rejoice or sorrow with him. Again, question mark. That's an interesting statement. When any one of the citizens experiences any good or evil. So when we see a cop executed by another degenerate who was encouraged by Obama and Eric Holder and the media to shoot police because of a constant litany going on for years about how evil police are, all of us are grieving for the dead cop. Or when we, the decent people of America, hear about a soldier who was killed by an Afghani who shot him in the back, all of us have sorrow at the same time, except the vermin on the left who probably rejoice. Do you understand that? So we don't have a well-ordered state. Instead, we have a disordered state. We have a disordered state that was always disordered, but more disordered now than it's ever been in my lifetime. And that's because of the imposter in the White House who has constantly understood from the day he was conscious that by conquering, by dividing, you conquer. He knows nothing else. He is the scorpion who you help across the river, and he stings you. And as you're dying, you say to the scorpion, why did you sting me, miss? And he looks at you, the frog, and he says, because I can, because I am a scorpion. Obama is that scorpion. He was helped across the river by liberals, and then, of course, he stung all of them in many different ways. He gave nobody anything because ultimately he's only for himself. He didn't learn the rest of that adage, which is, if I'm not for myself, who will I be? That he got right. But if I'm only for myself, what am I? He didn't get that part of it. That part of the wisdom didn't enter his brain yet. He's only for himself. And like a true Machiavellian leader, he used the people on the left to advance his own life. Okay? Meanwhile, 7 million men ages 25 to 54 are neither employed nor available for work. You hear this? Lots of men don't have a job and they're not even looking for one. 7 million men ages 25 to 54 are either not employed or are not available for work. Where'd they come from? The percentage of working age Americans in the labor force remains stuck near its lowest level since the late 70s. So tell me how Obama helped them. A goodly percentage of them are African American. How did he help them? He didn't. He used them. And then when things were not going well for him, he used them again to burn down Ferguson and burn down half of Baltimore and thus cause riots around the country. So now we have a nation that's in disarray. So we have the artists. Do we blame them for everything? No, but they are certainly a big part of the sickness, the social sickness in the country today. And I made my point. What, am I going to hammer it now over and over again? No. I did ask another leading question. No calls on that. I read that Mr. Trump is meeting with all of the people in the media who attacked him, who undermined him, including one of the worst people in the world, Wolf Blitzer. Now, why would Trump want to be in the same room with Wolf Blitzer? I don't think there's enough air spray in Manhattan to clean Trump Tower after these people went in there today. There's nothing. He can't use a wipe on the handles to get their germs out of the place. Why is he meeting with a guy like that? Why is he meeting with people who ripped him apart like that fraud Chuck Todd or MSNBC President Phil Griffin? How about Charlie Hose? Why would he have him around him? Why would he have people like from Face the Nation, like John Dickerson, who were seen undermining him during the campaign to kiss his ring? Well, that's because his chief campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway, arranged it. She is now God Almightyus. She is now the goddess of Almighty. No one knows who she is. No one knows where she came from. No one knows how a pollster of her obscure origins would wind up running the world, but she is. No one knows who she is or where she is. I do, though. And in fact, I want you to raise your hand if you can remember this. Many of you know me when I was a local host here in San Francisco on KSFO. Reggie, I'm right. I see the... And you went to my early events, the predators of the Tea Party events. I had the compassionate conservative events, like Saving the Real Private Ryan. Before that, I had Name Him and Shame Him in Oakland, Try Him and Fry Him in Oakland or somewhere, Marin Civic Center. We had a lot of big events, 2,000 people. They were astounding productions. I was lucky to have my family as producers, but since they've gone on to bigger and better things, I don't have producers anymore, so I don't do them anymore. And on top of that, I don't do live performances for a number of other reasons, not the least of which is the issue of the society has changed so drastically that I don't want to expose myself to unnecessary risk, nor my audience exposing them to unnecessary risk, to be frank with you, because of the crazies out there. So way back in one of my events, Compassionate Conservative events, I had on stage a whole slew of people from the Republican side. At one of my earliest events, 95, 96, on that stage was a woman named Kellyanne Conway, and I have the videotape. Now, how she rose from an obscure pollster to running the free world is an interesting story, but then again, it's a story that has not yet been told. Be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. It is the Savage Nation. We're going back to basics. Going back to the beginning of the Savage Nation by referring to Plato's Republic, written 2,700 years ago, asking what is the ideal state. And here we are with a new president. And many of us are cheering him on, as we should. But does he ask himself what is an ideal state? Does he know what he's trying to achieve? Does he have an architectural plan? What is the end result of Donald Trump's plans? What will be the nation that he wants to create? Can they even answer the question, did Obama have a master plan in mind when he started? Do any of our presidents ask themselves what is the ideal state? How do we make prosperity more available to all? How do we create more peace rather than more war? Because to me, it's all about peace more than anything. I said that last week, incidentally. It was as good a time as any to talk about it. Just after the election, I saw Mel Gibson's movie Hacksaw Ridge, and I went on the air, and just as I went on the air, I saw that Trump was speaking to Putin, even though he had not yet been sworn in. The two men vowed to work together, and frankly, it was a sigh of relief for me. The left should have been celebrating Trump instead of rioting in the streets. Do you know why? Because we almost had a war with Russia, thanks to the psychopath in the White House and the sorority of warmongers around him. He was ginning up a war with Russia, and the neolibs and the neocons were salivating for a war. But Trump had been on my show a month before the election, and he said he'd meet with Vladimir Putin. This was October. Right on this show, he said he would meet with Putin if he could, even before he was inaugurated. That's how badly Donald Trump wanted to tamp down war talk. But the crazy feminist sorority that surrounds Obama was dying for a war with Russia. For all I know, they still are. By the way, do we have that tape of Donald on the show? I bet you got it ready, Robert. Your foot pedals down on the... In a minute, wait. So I led Donald Trump to that commitment to meet with Putin with a series of questions I asked him on the show. You see, I've been writing about the liberal demonization of Putin and Russia for years in my books. I spent a long piece of scorched earth warning you about it. I know Putin is no angel, and I know that Russia's interests don't always coincide with ours. But that does not mean we must be enemies, and it doesn't mean we must give the forces of darkness in Washington another war to get rich on, while the rest of us suffer and our soldiers die for nothing. And that's why I asked Mr. Trump for a commitment to talk to Putin at the earliest possible opportunity. And I got it.
Yeah. If I win on November 8th, I think I could see myself meeting with Putin and meeting with Russia prior to the start of the administration.
One of the reasons I worked so hard to get Donald Trump elected is I believe he will be a man of peace. Put everything else aside, the most important thing in this world is not the economy, it's peace. Domestic peace, international peace, peace between individuals, peace between nations, far more important than gross domestic product or low interest rates. Did you know that hundreds of years ago, Thomas Hobbes said that the first law of nature is to seek peace? That is the essence of true conservatism. And I'm not just talking about the absence of military war on the battlefield. I'm talking about peace between individuals and groups within society. It's truly the opposite of progressivism, which seeks nothing but conflict. They promote conflict between people of different racial groups, because many of you have to understand the connection between armies fighting on battlefields and classes fighting in the streets of America. And that's because their liberal school teachers and professors never taught them the true nature of government.
Savage. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
I think a far bigger story is that Trump won't pursue charges against Clinton. That's a hot button issue. Now, I'm on record with this. When it came out about, what, a week ago or a sudden, I said it's a good idea not to pursue charges against Clinton. And many of you agreed, many of you didn't agree. The reason I said no is twofold. It's very pragmatic not to pursue charges against him. And you'll say, but where's the honor in pragmatism? Well, there's honor in running a country without constant strife. That's number one. But, you know, the art of the deal includes compromise. And I've told you from the beginning we're not going to get 100% of what he promised. I said at some point if we got 65, then I lowered it to 50. Now I'm down to a lower number. But it's 1,000% better than we would have had she won, the woman from Chappaqua. So we have to ask you, the audience, to chime in on this. Is it a good idea to give Hillary Clinton a pass on emails? Remember, President-elect Donald Trump said during the campaign that he would appoint a special prosecutor to pursue possible charges against Hillary Clinton after he would assume office. Now, you know, the truth is 75% of the American people believe that there are now two stands of justice. You know that. One for the poor, that's the rest of us, the middle class, the poor, and certainly a different one for the rich. Okay? Now, the investigation into Hillary Clinton was bungled from the beginning to the end. Trey Gowdy bungled it. FBI director bungled it, whose name I forgot. It's terrible. He was in the news because he undermined. He was the reason Hillary lost, to be honest with you. The last two bombshells. It's what destroyed her campaign was the email scandal. Remember how it excited the nation? So now, so they got what they wanted. He won. She lost. And they figures what's to be gained. And that is why this is a controversial decision. If it was not a controversial decision, it would not be a news article, nor would we be discussing it. So it is certainly a controversial decision. However, I am on record saying I understand where he's coming from. Because you know and I know, if he opens this one up again, it's going to further divide the nation, and I don't think we can afford that. On the other hand, what are we going to get out of that? Are they agreeing to put down their swords and their guns? Are they agreeing not to burn and kill and maim? Are they agreeing not to march in every street in America beating up police and attacking private citizens who own businesses? Are they agreeing to cease and desist? No. So we're not getting anything out of that. I want Hillary Clinton to get up there and tell them to stop. See, now that would be the trade-off. If Donald Trump says, I'm not going to pursue charges against you, Hillary, but I need you to get up there and tell these street animals to stop it, that would be a trade-off. But we haven't heard that from her. Instead, we've heard Obama encourage them to go out on the riots, haven't we? Why drag the country through this again? There are bigger things to do. I mean, you could stay positive, and, you know, the secret of success in all people I've known is try to stay positive. We can carry around vendettas against people who have harmed us, hurt us, slighted us. And you know what that does? It ruins your life. I have plenty of people I don't like. I have plenty of people who have stood in my way. I have plenty of people who have insulted me. You can't remember them every second. If you want to go forward, you have to go forward. And to go forward, you can't look backwards. It's that simple. So I think it's a good thing not to pursue charges against Clinton. We are going to see something in the Trump administration that many of you are going to gag on. And that is $1 trillion in infrastructure spending. And you're going to say, oh, no, you can't do that. Oh, no, you can't do that. Oh, no, 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 it's going to blow out the budget, expand the deficit. Well, I want to say, wait a minute, slow down, because there are different types of government spending. Many of us don't understand it, but not all expenditures are equal. If you spend $1 trillion on welfare, by and large, it's money lost. Now, it's true the money goes into the economy to a certain extent, but it doesn't really create anything, if you think about it. A lot of it's sent overseas, number two. That's kind of a negative form of government spending. And by the way, of all the money that Obama ripped off to give his investors, meaning his creditors, meaning his supporters, of all the money he ripped off with all of his programs, which he says there's no scandals, has anyone seen a single building, a single bridge, a single tunnel, a single road built under Obama's infrastructure spending? No, because there was none. Do you know that Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was a socialist, no question about it, created a new deal called the Works Progress Administration, WPA. It affected my family personally long before I was born, but I didn't know it. My father was poor, had no job, one of the tens of millions of unemployed Americans, a young kid, immigrant. So FDR created a new deal, and those were government jobs. He got a job in, I don't know where, he was a chauffeur for a low-grade assemblyman. I don't know how he got it. He's been dead so long, I can't even ask him, God rest him. But I don't know how he got it. He didn't, I don't know how he got it. I have no idea. But he told me he was in Saratoga Springs driving a congressman around or something, an assemblyman. As a young kid, he became a chauffeur. How did he get? I don't know. He wasn't a political guy. But he was able to put food on the table as a result of it. And I drive through tunnels here in San Francisco. I see the amazing tile work in tunnels. Or in New York, I see LaGuardia Airport, the Ronald Reagan Washington National Los Angeles airports. I see various bridges. I see the Florida Keys Overseas Highway. I've seen the Bonneville Power Project on the Columbia River. I've been to the Upper Mississippi locks and dams. These were all built by the federal government. And that is infrastructure spending. And that's part of the infrastructure that made America great. Now, Donald Trump is a builder. He's a very, very important builder. And he said he's going to rebuild the infrastructure. We know our bridges and roads are a disaster. We know our airports are worse than third world countries. So what is going to happen is Trump's going to raise money to do these things. There's two types of spending. If you spend $1 trillion on building all of these things, according to a study by Wilbur Ross, the Trump policies of spending $1 trillion to rebuilding these things would add $2 trillion to the economy. And so, therefore, the $1 trillion he would invest would generate another $1 trillion in ROI. You know what ROI is, return on investment, something Obama never learned in Marxism 101. Alinsky 101 didn't know about return on investment. To him, it was only the marching and the destroying. So he's going to have a tax from the right, a tax from the left. But they're going to create amazing jobs. They're going to put people to work who will pay taxes. They're going to be American citizens. Do you support infrastructure spending of up to $1 trillion to rebuild America's infrastructure? But there are many, many other topics that are very, very important today. Listen to clip number 5, where John McShane says something about how to treat captured enemy combatants in clip 5.
There's no judge in America that wouldn't say they're in violation of the law, because it's specifically in law now prohibited. So I don't give a damn what the President of the United States wants to do or anybody else wants to do. We will not waterboard. We will not torture. If you inflict enough pain on somebody long enough, they're going to tell you whatever they think you want to hear.
Is he wrong? Now, the you see, the emotional instinct on this is to say, yes, put the Islamofascists on an ironing board for all I care. Get a hair iron and put it on their eyes. Many of you don't care. Many of you would do anything to them to stop a bomb from going off in your daughter's schoolyard or in a mall, right? However, McCain is saying, I don't care what the president says, we will not waterboard, while Donald Trump says he will waterboard. So I think we need to discuss it. That's a big topic. Should waterboarding continue to be banned? Remember, we are not immune to like behavior committed against our troops if they are captured. Now, unfortunately, the Islamofascists, who we have been fighting for too long now because of weakness on the part of our non-leadership, they could have been crushed a long time ago with a vociferous attack. You know that, and I know that. If you could defeat the Nazi army, which had one of the most phenomenal air forces and navies in the world, in less time than it's taken for Obama to stare down ISIS, you know, that tells you more about Obama than it does about ISIS, incidentally. But are there standards on the battlefield and off the battlefield that should be upheld no matter what they do? We don't have to prove to them we're better. We know we're better than them. We know that they're subhumans. We know that the things they do to men, women, and children are beyond the human pale. But does that mean we go down to their level? Now, some say that's the only thing they'll understand. An eye for an eye. You know, you're biblical in that regard. You know, if they pluck your eye out, pluck two of their eyes out. Or as George Orwell, one of my heroes, wrote, he was an early-on socialist. He was enamored of it in the early 30s when socialism was very popular amongst the intelligentsia. And then when he saw how the Soviet system, the communists, had taken over the socialist system and turned it into what it is in the Castro Cuba of today, a dictatorship, or what it is today in North Korea, a pure dictatorship, George Orwell ceased to be a socialist, and he revised his opinion of socialism, and he said, if a man comes to put a bomb in your mother's house, put a bomb in his mother's house first. So in other words, he learned that you have to fight fire with fire. I saw a picture of a muzzled bear in chains at a circus-themed nightclub in France. I got so angry. I wanted to strangle the owner of the club. I wanted to put him in chains. But the problem is the owner of that club probably is in chains after hours, so you'd only be doing him a favor. But they brought this poor bear to the club in Brittany on November 19th. And the animal comes from a traveling Russian circus. And the picture of the poor bear was shared on social media. Thousands of people signed an online petition calling for a ban on animals appearing in nightclubs. I personally think we should go much further than that, because there are other issues. Did you hear about the world's saddest polar bear, who had been kept in a shopping center in China? Did you know about that? This poor little bear, a polar bear, had been kept in a shopping center in China. And they finally put this poor bear out into sunlight. Have you seen pictures of the panda bears who were caged in China and how they are depressed and hunched over? They look like a human being who is depressed. They've given up all hope. Their hearts are broken. Do you know that? Do you know that animals have feelings? Did you know that? I know many of us eat animals. I get that. That unto itself is a problem that many of us have to struggle with, but we do because we're carnivores and we go ahead with it anyway. But if you go to a slaughterhouse, you probably become a vegan. Just one trip to a slaughterhouse, you probably never eat a hamburger again. Just look at the eyes of a cow as it's being led to its slaughter. And look at the cow as it looks back upon its fellow cows before it's killed. And hear the cries and the screams in the slaughterhouse. I'm sorry to tell you. So in other words, there you are. But now we're talking about something different. Not the slaughtering of animals. A muzzled bear in a nightclub? Is that normal for you? So I'm going to raise the question to another level. Is it time to close all zoos? There's no answer to it all. At a certain point, there's no answer. You have to have a personal faith and pray for the best. But when you start to see things globally, it's hard to believe in anything except survival. To be fair, I told you that before. At the end of the day, and I'm going to get back to all my questions because it ties into waterboarding. It ties into giving Hillary Clinton the pass. It ties into should poor animals in zoos be released. It ties into infrastructure spending of $1 trillion. Me, it's all about survival. I found that a long time ago in my own life, I've tried everything. I've tried prayer. I've tried meditation. I've tried fasting. I've tried travels to the most obscure places on earth looking for the answer. And at the end of the day, I found out it's all about survival. I still have a childish faith in God because I have no choice in the matter. A pure egoist believes that he himself exists by himself and that no one existed before him. A pure egoist can say, I don't believe in God. Well, who do you believe in? Come back to me when you're screaming with bowel cancer and tell me who you believe in. I'm not trying to wish this on anybody, but you know the old adage, there are no atheists in a foxhole. I don't think there are too many atheists in cancer wards either, incidentally. Be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. So I got the questions again. Do you support infrastructure spending of up to $1 trillion, which might produce $2 trillion in benefits to America in terms of jobs, etc., according to real economists as opposed to professional politicians who have no idea that some things... Well, there's an old adage. I didn't know this. When I was a youngster, I wasn't from a family that had any money, so we didn't know anything about money. We didn't understand money. All I knew, my father went to work. He bought something for X and he sold it for Y, and that was the profit. And if at the end of the year, the rent and the this and the that taken off and there was a profit, then the family could pay the house off and I could, you know, work, whatever. That's what we did. There was not even, he never invested. I didn't even understand what the word meant. Investment was for white people. That's a joke, by the way. They were for different people. They invested. We didn't know about investing. And then at a certain point in my 20s, I don't know exactly when, who knows, I started to rub shoulders in a different society from a friend of mine who, I told you about the kid, he's a great guy, I haven't seen him in 40 years, I don't know where he is, but the father was the one who owned a bar on the Upper West Side, which is very unusual for the men in the family groups that I came from, who were all hardworking tradesmen, but this guy owned a bar on the Upper West Side. He was a tough kid, he was a boxer, a fighter. His son was a tough kid too, like the father. So the father sent him to the New York Military Academy, where Mr. Trump went, by the way. I'm not saying they knew each other. They didn't. But through that association, I met kids whose fathers had a lot of money or more money. And they talked about things, even in between talking about women and having fun, which is all we really did. I would hear that it would drift over, like investments and this. I didn't even know what it was. And one of them once said, I never, to this day, I remember, and he once said to me, because I complained about putting investing some of my own money in something, and he snapped at me, this rich kid. He said, if you want to make money, you got to spend money. I had never heard that before. See, I came from a background where you didn't spend money to make money. It made no sense to me. I thought if you spent money, you lost it. Right? Like you bought shoes. That's spent money. And all you had was the shoe. I didn't understand you invested the money. So, you know, it took me years to absorb that. If you want to spend money, if you want to make money, you got to spend money. And then I started to use that and incorporate it in my life. It was like a miracle, like a genius idea. Now, Obama, on the other hand, I'm going to give you an example of Obama and the Democrats. They're like me as a young kid. They don't understand the first rules of capitalism. They think that when you want to do something, you take it from somebody. You appropriate it through taxes, regulations, permits, and then you spend it on building up a base of voters by buying their votes. They don't invest in anything. Obama's not built one bridge, one road, one building, one dam, nothing. Of the trillions of dollars this bum has appropriated in order to bring in illegal aliens, in order to buy votes, I haven't seen a bridge, a tunnel, nothing built by him. Because he is still like that, you know, that kid that I was, who doesn't understand the first rules of the nation he lives in.
Savage.
Should waterboarding of Islamofascists be used to stop? Do you support infrastructure spending of up to $1 trillion? Should zoos be closed? I mean, I love this show. I want you to clip 3 from Donald Trump, not 2, Robert, please. Number 3, go right to 3.
On national security, I will ask the Department of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to develop a comprehensive plan to protect America's vital infrastructure from cyber attacks and all other form of attacks. On immigration, I will direct the Department of Labor to investigate all abuses of visa programs that undercut the American worker.
I would look into the abuse of the welfare system. I'd look into the abuse of the food stamp system. I was in a restaurant where I learned a lot of things. And there is a chef, a terrific guy, he's Mexican. And he's a big, big strap. There's different, you know, people in every walk of life. You say Mexican, you have an image. But, you know, I have to tell you, everyone, not all Mexicans are alike. I mean, that's an obvious statement, okay? But Americans, I mean, you say Mexican, you say Irishman, you say Jew, you say this. Everyone has an image. He was a strapping type. Wonderful, friendly man. I've only eaten there 3 times. He comes over to the table and sits down and we're talking. He says he works 7 days a week. And he said to me that he loves America. He bought his first property a few years ago. and he's trying to save for another one. He's got a little child and this and that. And he says, you know, I have a neighbor where I live who's a Muslim. He has two brand new cars. They go on vacations. And he said, they're on welfare. He said, it really eats me alive. He said, how do they do this? How does the system let them get away with it? Well, it's not to single out Muslims, but you and I both know that everyone's afraid to say one word about Muslims today for fear they'll be called a racist. So now you have an answer, which I predicted months ago, as to why Hispanics would be voting in droves for Mr. Trump. I told you before anyone else in the media saw it, because I'm a clairvoyant when it comes to reading the tea leaves of the political landscape. I told you that he was going to trend much higher with Hispanics, and I gave you the reasons. And this must have been last April, March or April. I don't remember the date. I said, no. He's going to do much better with Hispanics than Mittens Romney did for two reasons. One, Hispanic men are macho, and they don't like taking orders from women. That's number one. And I said, number two, the Hispanics I met are all hardworking, and they all want the American dream. They want to be like Donald Trump. They know they can't be as rich as him, but they know they can have a taste of the American way, the American life that they've come here for. So they do. They put their money into property. They work hard. They're family men. They take their little girl to church on Sunday. I've seen it. So I knew they'd vote for Trump. He's not alone in that. Many Hispanics voted for Trump. But the rats in the media don't want you to know it. They let it leak out a little bit, but they're not telling you what really happened. I got to go back to the night of the election. I threw a big party for 35 people at a club in San Francisco that I recently joined. And we watched the TV. I left at 8:30. I was tired. I got home. I sat and watched till 11:30. It still wasn't over. It was neck and neck, neck and neck, neck and neck. And then I went to sleep right after the weird guy that works for her, who I hope we never, ever see again. I don't remember his name. The one who had like the hawky face and fingernails. Podesta. I didn't even give him a name. The name itself has become a noun for Podesta. There's nothing you could add to that. If you say he's a Podesta unto itself, that now says it all. The guy was strange, but he gave a speech that said, it's not over yet. Please go home, he said to his followers, the Democrats. We're going to try to count every vote tonight. What happened then? Tell me what happened then. Within a very short period of time, was it not? Hillary Clinton gave a concession speech. What do you think occurred, ladies and gentlemen of the savage jury, between the time the strange Podesta said, we do not concede, we're going to count every vote tonight, and Hillary Clinton's concession speech? What happened? A deal was worked out. Look, I'm a part-time writer. You know, I've only written a few books in my life. The last number, on New York Times bestsellers, one after the other. But I do write fiction from time to time. And in my fictional story, what happened was this. They worked a deal out. The Trump campaign and Hillary sat down, and they worked a deal out. That if she concedes and doesn't fight him, he will not pursue charges against her. That's called politics. I know we the people don't like it. We voted for Trump because we thought he was not a politician. But we found out he is a politician. We found it out along the way, and we found it out most particularly when he appointed Renzo Priebus from the RNC as chief of staff. I took a big chance. And I knew I was gambling on it when I did it. I wrote an article, and the article was put on the Drudge Report for 18 straight hours. It got millions and millions of hits around the world. And I know that I alienated everyone in the Trump campaign. In fact, I discussed whether to publish that article or not. And people said to me, do you realize what's going to happen if you criticize anything that Donald Trump does? I said, yes, I do know. But I have an obligation to my listeners first and my readers rather than to my own desires in life for anything. Because without my supporters, I have nothing. Do you understand that? Do you understand what I just said? I don't think people just got that. I knew what I was doing when I criticized Trump's appointment of Renzo Priebus. I knew what chance I was taking. I knew that they would never, ever forgive me. I knew that the umbrella would never be unfurled for the inauguration. I'm telling you like it is. That umbrella, which I had on, how many times Donald was on this show? And at the end, I would always end with a funny little line like, well, I got that umbrella waiting. He knew what I was saying. He was that quick. He said, well, you keep it ready, Michael. You're going to need it in February. Well, I don't know which February he's talking about, but I haven't heard anyone tell me I'm going to need it for this February. But nevertheless, it'll go into my archives, and maybe I'll auction it off for a valuable cause one of these days, like releasing some of our soldiers who are rotting in prisons in America for having done their job in Afghanistan or in Iraq a little too well for George Bush and for Barack Obama. How many Marines and soldiers are rotting in military prisons around this nation of ours for having had the guts to stand up and kill an Islamo-fascist before he himself got killed? They're rotting away. Maybe I'll donate, you know, the money I raised from the inauguration umbrella that was never used for their defense. But that's it. That's it. There's nothing you can do. You make decisions and you have to live with them. And I'm living with it. And what do I win by that? I'm just making it about me for a minute. By retaining my independence, by retaining my willingness to still support him, but send cautionary messages out to you and to his own campaign about what's coming if they continue to compromise us, I am retaining my integrity. I'm retaining what you listen for. I'm retaining the reason he got elected. Now, make no mistake about it. Many of you say, Savage, you should have been press secretary. Savage, you should have been hired to run the NSF or the NIH. First of all, I don't want any job. I got to tell you right now, I'm not taking a cut in pay. I'm not a bureaucrat. I won't live in Washington. All of those things are very real. I'm an old-style kind of guy. I don't like leaving the privacy of my own life. I just don't. I don't like dressing in suits and ties. I will do it, but not too often. I'm very content with what I do for a living. But what I do for a living is all about you, the audience, listening to this show right now, whether it be in speakers, in your ears, or on a radio somewhere. And all I have, one thing only. You know what that is? My integrity. I hope you appreciate what I'm saying to you. And now we'll go back to these questions. And they're good questions. How do you feel about Trump not pursuing charges against Clinton? Should zoos be closed? Should waterboarding of Islamo-fascists be used? Do you support infrastructure spending of up to $1 trillion? And if you spend $1 trillion on infrastructure and you can make $2 trillion, overall, that's an investment. So it's not all lost money. Now, it's true Obama took $1 trillion in the beginning. What was it called? Something was called, Robert. Do you remember? We don't remember. It was like a program he came up with, right? But nothing was built with the money. Where did it go? Where did it go? Where did it go? Take a look at Manhattan real estate. Take a look at L.A. real estate. Take a look at Florida real estate. And you'll know where the Democrats put their money. That's where it went, into their own pockets. They didn't build anything with it. They invested for themselves as they screwed the public and took the money for themselves. They didn't build anything with the money. He didn't create any jobs with it. Okay, so now we're moving on to Trump, who wants to rebuild America. He's right. Remember during the campaign he said, you go to a third world country, like, let's pick any one of them, China. He was amazed how new the airports were, how clean the roads were. I remember years ago I would go to Malaysia, the roads were better than in San Francisco. San Francisco has an infrastructure from another universe, like a fourth world. I invite you to drive from San Francisco north over the Golden Gate Bridge. I don't care where you're from, you either live here or you don't. And I want you to pay attention to one section of that roadway. They built a tunnel. I don't know what that cost. They widened the road and built a tunnel. A beautiful job. Beautiful job. Probably the same people have been building roads and bridges going back to Roman times got the contracts for obvious reasons. Because in those days, all roads lead to Rome. In this days, all roads still lead to Rome. But nevertheless, they can still build, those people. So they built a beautiful tunnel with the federal money, state money, whatever it was to build. Now you get off that piece of road and you go to the piece just before the Golden Gate Bridge. Broken. You could damage a rim. You could damage a rim getting on that bridge. Broken. Potholes going onto the Golden Gate Bridge, an iconic structure. Why? Because the thieves who run San Francisco have stolen every nickel of federal, state, and local money for themselves. They haven't invested a dime in the infrastructure. So now enter the federal government. Donald Trump wants to come in and build. That would be his New Deal. His New Deal would be, I would think, a public works project of this type for the greater benefit of America, but specifically for the forgotten man and forgotten woman, the blue-collar American, so to speak. He is a builder. He is a visionary builder who likes to see things built. Remember what I called Obama in Scorched Earth or Government Zero, Obama the Destroyer? Obama lives to see things destroyed. He destroyed our faith in America. I could go do the litany. I'm very good at it. I could give you the iambic right down the line. Obama was a destroyer. He still is. He only knows how to destroy things. The border, the language, the culture. Okay, you got the picture? Okay, so how do you pay for this infrastructure, Eddie? First of all, it's a matter of accountancy. That's number one. But number two, you have to understand that ROI is an important thing. ROI, return on investment. There is a great article about this on Breitbart by a man named Virgil. I don't know whose synonym, acronym that is, but whatever. You need an ROI. What does that mean? Well, it's the opposite of just spending money that goes nowhere. It produces benefits. And as a Trump economic advisor Wilbert Ross told Bloomberg News, Trump policies could add more than $2 trillion to the economy. Okay, that means that his proposed infrastructure expenditures would be $1 trillion invested, which would generate another trillion in ROI. Now, you know and I know that Republicans, mainstream thinkers who are not really deep thinkers, who are just superficial sand flies, will oppose any such spending. They will say that government can never at any time do anything right, privatize it. Yeah, okay, right. Well, really, how about the Panama Canal or the interstate highways or the internet? Who built that? Oh, the government built it. They did a pretty good job on it. So the fact of the matter is, these would produce great jobs. People would go to work. They'll be paying taxes. They'll go on vacations. They'll buy new cars. They'll buy new houses. They'll buy new furniture. But the conservatives and the libertarians will argue that any new debt is bad debt. That's knee-jerk hostility to anything the government does. And that's an odd thing, because it's not 100% true. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. I'm going to give you the public work projects that were created during the Great Depression with public money. You know that at that time unemployment approached 25%. The nation was destroyed. Men were in the streets on bread lines. They were selling pencils. I knew guys whose uncles were selling pencils in New York on 42nd Street. They were out in the street selling pencils. They had nothing. So along came the great socialist president, FDR. And he decided to do what Stalin did, what Hitler did for that matter. By the way, the 30s were a time of great public spending on huge projects. Hitler built the Autobahn. How do you think Hitler, by the way, saved Germany economically? Do you know how he did it? Through great public works projects. And as Stalin did the same thing, the whole city of Stalingrad was built in the 30s. And these created jobs. And FDR did the same thing here by building things. George Washington Bridge, Triborough Bridge, Washington Airport, LaGuardia Airport, Upper Mississippi Locks and Dams, the Bonneville Power Project on the Columbia River, the Robert F. Kennedy Bridge in New York, the Florida Keys Overseas Highway were built in those times. 78,000 bridges under FDR's Public Works Administration and WPA, public and private money together. Proposals from states and cities. Millions of men and women were put back to work. Rosie the Riveter, for example, was the woman version working in the factories, the shipyards, riveting the ships. Did you know that? As we were gearing up for war with the Nazis and the Japanese. But during that time, 78,000 bridges were built. 650,000 miles of roads, 700 miles of airport runways, 13,000 playgrounds. I played in some of them myself as a kid. I didn't know who built them. 125,000 military and civilian buildings, 40,000 schools, which are still standing. Obama's built Jack, John. By the way, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, which was Obama's boondoggle, was $831 billion. That's almost $1 trillion. Not a single bridge or tunnel, so far as I know. Where did all that money go? Huh? Green scam artists. Solar panels made in China. That's my guess. See what I'm saying? So don't think $1 trillion is not a lot of money. It is, but it depends upon how you use it. In Scorched Earth, I have a whole chapter on cybersecurity, and I've insisted that the United States forcibly recruit workers from Microsoft, from Google, and from Facebook, and force these pirates who run these companies, who are worth hundreds of billions of dollars collectively, who do not pay their fair share of taxes, take away their a goodly portion of their workers, who are the best at this, at hacking into the enemy's websites and doing what we need to do, and let the, instead of making them, you know, accept military pay for forcing them to work for the government, for let's say 6 months to a year at a time, let these companies pay them at their full corporate salaries. What is wrong with that idea? The government has tremendous power. A government can do almost anything it wants, and I believe that's long overdue. It's time for these cyber pirates, I should say these Silicon Valley pirates, to pay their fair share and to contribute to the national security, which they've not done at all. In fact, you can argue they've aided and abetted the enemy for profit.
Savage. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Well, Eddie and Teddy did it. Thank you for being with me today. It's a momentous day in American history. All of the snot-nosed losers of the world can't believe that we, the people, did it. First, I got to make this personal in order to make it political. I went to sleep after my party, before her concession speech. I really couldn't take much more of it. And when before I went to sleep, I watched that guy, whatever his name is, Podesta, give the speech. I saw a face unlike any I had seen in modern American history. When he actually got on the stage, I saw the face of a touch of evil. Let me put it to you that way. It was a face of evil. And he would not concede. And I sent some friends emails and I said, I'm afraid they're going to steal it in the middle of the night because he would not concede the election. I said to them, I'm afraid they're going to steal the election. In fact, I put it up on my Facebook and Twitter feed saying, I'm afraid they're going to steal it in the middle of the night. Well, just as I turned the lights out and was about to go to sleep, there it came. She gave the concession speech. Four major newspapers declared him the winner. I had to take down my Facebook posting. So they gave it up pretty quickly, and I didn't think that they would. But you know, Hillary knew she would lose. Why do I say that? The media's acting shocked. But she canceled her fireworks show for New York City. Internal polling showed them she was not going to win. Internal polling showed her what we all knew, that Obama is the most hated president in the history of this nation, the most divisive, hated man to have ever stolen the presidency. And by the way, we have 90 more days of this devil in the White House. He will use every trick in the book, executive orders. You can't believe what he's going to do to this country before he walks out of there. So we have a big fight on our hands, don't we? We have to keep our eyes on the ball. I know many of you want to celebrate, and you should. We have the presidency, the House of Representatives, the U.S. Senate, and we're going to have the Supreme Court. And speaking of the Supreme Court, Donald Trump gets to replace the Supreme Court justice who died under mysterious circumstances. I believe he was executed. I believe the Supreme Court justice was killed, smothered to death. And the reason I say it is, it's logical, it's common sense. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. But you know, even if a homeless bum is found dead in the streets somewhere in America, the law requires that the homeless bum be subjected to an autopsy. Do you know that there was no autopsy of the highest Supreme Court justice in the land after he was found smothered to death in Texas in a border hotel? No autopsy. They cremated him right away. It was a cover-up. They killed him. And they killed him so they can push their psychotic socialist agenda forward. That was my opinion. It still is. Well, anyway, that's history. Trump replaces the Chief Justice of Supreme Court. Then we got the psychosis of Breyer, the psychosis of that maniac from the ACLU. She's going. They're in their 80s. They're on their last legs. They will be gone during his term. And he will replace them, I hope, with young men and women for the Supreme Court, no older than 35 years of age. Because I want a conservative Supreme Court for the next 50 years. That's what we're going to have. And God's hand is all over this. And if you think that Donald Trump appearing on the Savage Nation yesterday was not instrumental in him winning yesterday in so many marginal districts, I mean marginal not in terms of individuals, but in terms of the competition, you are mistaken. There was a reason that his handlers chose the Savage Nation for the 12th hour. And that is because this audience is the most activist audience in American media. Never make a mistake about that one. You are the most activist audience of any audience in the United States of America. There are shows with larger numbers of listeners, but they're nowhere near as active. They're nowhere near as passionate about the show as you are. And I can prove it to you with the fact that I ran a last-ditch campaign to win the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, and I ran against a very strong competitor who has far more stations than I with his own TV show, and I beat him by a large margin because you voted me in. It was directly to the people. That was almost a harbinger of what was coming. You see, when awards are picked by people on the inside, they can pick anyone they want. Just like the media picked Hillary Clinton. They said she was going to win. They sneered at Trump. But when the people themselves are allowed to voice their decisions, something else entirely happens. And that's what just happened. We saw our republic in action. We saw what the vote actually can mean. Many of you had given up on the process. I have a young man, 27 years old, who works for me as my personal assistant and as a producer and many other things. And he said he has hope for America now. He said, I actually thought the system was rigged and that no honest man could ever win an election again in this country. He said, I have hope for the future. I have hope for America. But the first thoughts I had after coming home from that fabulous dinner that I put on over at a certain place in San Francisco with some of the finest people I ever met in my life, all I could think about was how police felt and how soldiers felt and how Marines felt and how pilots felt. All I could think was that the cops felt steel running through their veins again. And all I could think is that the soldiers felt hope again. And they felt steel running through their spines again, dying to pick up arms for America, Americans, and our freedom. Once again, they feel the pride of their duty to America. And they're not going to have to face the wrath of the most hateful president America has ever had to live through. A man who has turned the war on police into an art form, getting away with virtual murder while pretending that he's a man of peace. They're not going to have to put up with this come January, are they? Because one thing is for sure, Donald Trump is going to be on the side of law and order. And even liberals want law and order. They are tired of being knocked down in the streets of New York by thugs who have been activated by Barack Obama. They are tired of being pushed in front of subway cars in New York subways because they've been activated by Barack Obama, who's given them a wink and a nod telling them about inequality and white privilege. They're sick of it. And even the liberals want law and order, and I can prove it to you. I'll prove it to you with one quick story. Out here in California, there were many initiatives on the ballot, including a ban on the death penalty, another attempt by the psycho libs to eliminate the death penalty. They thought that with the advent of the marijuana and the legalization of marijuana and gay marriage, you know, their whole shopping list of progressive values, they could now kick the death penalty out the door. And guess what the people did in California? Even in liberal California, where there is no choice between candidates, it's all a single party system, the Californians rejected a ban on the death penalty. In fact, they voted to speed up executions. For the second time in 4 years, voters rejected a law to reduce the maximum sentence for capital crimes to life in prison without the possibility of parole. In fact, Prop 62 was defeated 54-46%. That's a much larger margin than it was in 2012. Proposition 66 would have set strict timelines for state court rulings in capital cases, and it won a narrow 51% of the vote. Do you know what that means? People want those on death row to fry. They want Sparky. They want Sparky to start sparking again. And they want the psychopathic lawyers out of the jails. They want those vermin on death row to be killed for the crimes against humanity. And that's in liberal California. And that tells you that America wants a law and order candidate. And that tells you that behind the scenes, even liberals are tired of the crime wave that Obama has induced in this nation. All of the snot-nosed losers of the world can't believe that we the people did it. That's right, we the people did it. I love the articles that it's all the uneducated, dumb American white males out there who did it. They couldn't be further from the truth. I know so many people with highest degrees you could imagine who are 100% in Trump's camp. But these idiots are so out of touch with reality that they continue to feed each other the same lie that they're smarter than everyone, they're brighter than everyone, they're better educated than everyone, and only the dumb, unwashed masses out there elected Donald Trump. Nothing can be further from the truth. We won everything. We won the presidency. We won the House. We won the Senate. We won 26 governorships. But the biggest prize of all, next to the presidency, is that we won the Supreme Court for the next 50 years. Let me tell you something. God's hand is all over this election. I've been getting emails from Israel proving that the Jewish Torah, in the letters of the Torah, predicted Trump's victory, and we're going to talk about that as well. But I've got to go back to the beginning. Were it not for you, the listener of the Savage Nation, there would be no Donald Trump. Make no mistake about it. We were there for him long before anyone else. All those who ridiculed him, criticized him, ridiculed you calling you Trumpsters, Trumpettes, Trump voters, Trump of this or Trump of that. They laughed at you. Then they joined the parade all of a sudden. That's great. I'm glad everyone joined the parade. But long before they were there, I was there. And I bet on him and I won. I won big time. And the important part is that America won big time. It's not about Michael Savage. It's about America. It's not even about Donald Trump. He is a vehicle of change in this country and in the world. One of the first leaders to have contacted Donald Trump is the president of Egypt, because he knows that had the she-witch won, the Muslim Brotherhood would have been activated in Egypt, bringing down the largest Muslim nation on earth. 80 million people live in Egypt, and she wanted the Muslim Brotherhood to run Egypt. Never forget who she is. Never forget who Mook is. Never forget who Podesta is. Never forget who they all are. And they are part of the basket of history right now. They are in the dumpster of history, all of them, thank God. I was getting emails from religious people about a week ago telling me that it was predicted by a very leading, a leading biblical figure in Israel that Trump was going to win. That there were mentions in the Jewish Torah that Trump would win. I didn't pay much attention to it because I don't believe that much in that stuff, to be honest with you. But I look at it and I said, holy God. Source, breaking news, Israel. Trump upset victory divinely sent to begin messianic process, say the rabbis. And they say, as the rabbi who oversees the final resting place of King David on Mount Zion, Rabbi Yosef Berger is intimately connected to the spirituality of kingship. For him, it was clear what tipped the scales in favor of the Republican underdog. Listen to this. He said, I have known for months that Donald Trump would win the elections, Rabbi Berger told the Breaking Israel News. The numerology of his name is Moshiach, which means Messiah. He is connected to the messianic process, which is happening right now. When Trump promised to move the American embassy to Jerusalem, he attached himself to the power of the Messiah, which gave him the boost he needed. If you separate from Jerusalem, disaster will follow. Who would not think that God's hand was involved, despite what the experts predicted? Trump's victory is also in part a reaction to Obama's Israel policies. Trump's victory was in part a reaction to what Obama did with Iran, a terror nation. $170 billion to a terror-worshipping nation? $170 billion that no one even knew where it came from? Where did Obama get that money from? Where did those piles of bills come from? He's never answered to anybody. This was a mandate against Obama's insane policies. Make no mistake about it. It was Obama who made himself a very big part of this campaign. And let me tell you something else. God was part of the political process. And God punished President Obama and those who were working with him to harm Israel and support the terror state of Iran. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. It is the Savage Nation on the greatest day in modern American history when the average man or woman stood up to those who thought we were gone. And I'm going to read you one page that changed America, because this book changed America. The book is called Scorched Earth. But you probably didn't see the subtitle, Restoring the Country After Obama, because that's why we elected Trump. And here's where I ended the book. I used to call those citizens, those proud Americans, the Eddies of the world. It's just a name, a common Christian name, but it resembles that which is the best in us. The Eddies who fought in World War II. The Eddies who put down their saws and ceased to be carpenters or electricians or farmers and went and fought the Nazi Übermenschen. The Supermen, as they call themselves. And every man who defeated that Superman will never forget it. Every man defeated Superman. Then when Eddie came home from winning World War II, he built the United States into the greatest country on earth in the 1950s. The greatest nation in the history of the world. Then along came the human plagues, the vermin I talk about on this show. The shyster William Kunstler. The degenerate Allen Ginsberg, the drug pusher Timothy Leary, and Bella Abzug, who had her own special brand of feminist supremacy. There were the militant Black Panthers, whom even Martin Luther King Jr. couldn't stand. And this group of evildoers, these left-wing drug peddlers and social peddlers, destroyed the will of America. They twisted the entire American mind. Eddie had children, never forget it. And not all of Eddie's boys became girls. Not all of Eddie's boys went to Harvard. Not all of Eddie's boys went to NYU. Not all of Eddie's girls went to Columbia Law School. Eddie's boys and girls are still in America, and they still have American values. Those blue-collar families are still the majority. They're still the backbone of this country. They didn't vote in the last presidential election because Barry Obama and Mittens Romney didn't speak to them. But I can guarantee you, as I sit here, that they're going to vote in the next one. And when that sleeping giant, those former non-participants in the political process, finally elect their leader, you're going to see a change unlike any you've seen in your lifetime, whether you like it or not. They'll vote because they'll finally realize that the West is being savaged from within by militant Islamists and secularists from the left. They'll vote because if they do not, Christian beliefs will be stamped out and the West will be stamped out along with them. You are hearing loud outcries against Donald Trump and the rising forceful Eddies. You're hearing them described as bigots, racists, anti-women, anti-Semites, and homophobic. But those voices will eventually dim. The shouters will be reduced to the marginal characters that they've always been. They'll be put back into the boxes they came from. How do I know this? Because the Eddies will come to our defense one more time. They will stand shoulder to shoulder to honor the legacy of those who built this nation, who fought its wars, who bowed in prayer in a rich variety of faiths, and who raised the families that are the backbone of America. And when they do, I can guarantee you that this nation, that this world, will be a safer place, even to the lunatic fringe.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Again, welcome back to the program on this very powerful day. Very, very powerful day. I saw the movie Snowden, I think last week, and I tried to talk about it Friday, but it went over like lead belly. But the reason it's so important is because Oliver Stone is a certified dyed-in-the-wool leftist. And he so condemns Obama in that movie for having created the greatest surveillance state in the history of the world, way outdoing the Stasi of East Germany, that I've got to talk about it. And then I had a friend, an artist, send me something. She's an artist and a loyal Savage Nation listener. And she said that, well, I'm going to not read the whole thing, but she said, look what we're going through right now. She said, do you remember 10 or so years ago Do you remember 10 or so years ago leading up to 2012 brought us into a new digital world of exposure? It only took 10 years or so to go from AOL's You've Got Mail on clunky desktop computers to pocket-sized tracking and recording devices carried voluntarily by nearly every individual. And she says the next 10 years could very well see technological and societal reform of comparable or much greater severity. What we're seeing now is either the approximate frame of this new age, and we will continue to gradually settle into it, or just getting started, we haven't even seen anything yet. Of course, I believe that. The new age of surveillance by this monster called the government, domestically and globally, is now a tool that will change all of our lives, and I want to talk about this. And I'm going to ask you the question right up front about that. The next 10 years, what do you envision? Think back to the last 10 years. Think about the last 10 years. I mean, I was on the radio in 94. I remember 99 when the crackpots were saying because of Y2K, the world was coming to an end. I laughed at them. I was right. You were wrong. So I'm not a catastrophic individual where I think the world is coming to an end. Moreover, I have a message of positiveness for you today. I have a message of strength and hope for all of you. And that is this. Think about this carefully. The Jewish calendar, which is a lunar calendar, entered the year 5,777. That means almost 6,000 years of continuous history, unbroken. Despite the purges of the Middle Ages, despite the Holocaust, despite hurricanes, tornadoes, invasions, casting out, Babylonian captivity, 6,000 years of continuous history. God, if the Jews can survive 6,000 years of continuous history, how can you not survive 8 years of Hillary Clinton? So don't throw in the towel and give up and say the world's coming to an end, okay? You can survive it. WikiLeaks Tuesday announcement canceled for security concern. That was a huge story. Julian Assange was going to make an announcement from the balcony of the Ecuadorian embassy in London tomorrow. And it was supposed to destroy Hillary's campaign. But he just announced he can't do it out of security concerns. WikiLeaks has canceled an announcement its founder Julian Assange was to make from the balcony of London's Ecuadorian embassy tomorrow, but not before Donald Trump supporter Roger Stone tweeted Hillary Clinton would be done by the next day because of the planned announcement. So someone threatened them. They threatened them with a Vince Foster. I don't know if there's polonium sushi over there in the Ecuadorian embassy, but he didn't want to go out on the balcony and take a bullet. Oh, yeah, we're living in great times. How we become a banana republic so quickly. So we've all known, I mean, that we're being surveilled. I mean, if you didn't know that, what did you know? I tend to forget it, like, I don't care what the perverts at the NSA are listening to. You know, if they see me walking around in my underwear, let them drop dead. If that's all they got to do is look at me on some hidden thing from my Skype or thing, and this, that got nothing better to do? Hey, here's the question. Hey, hold it a minute. You, Schmendrick, who supports Obama and thinks the surveillance state is so great, even though he's the devil. Even though he's absolutely the devil. He's so silk smooth and so good at what he does. He is the devil incarnate, in my opinion. Well, if not the devil, let's say the devil's apprentice. Okay, I'll lighten it a bit. So he's created the greatest spy agency, and instead of turning on people who threaten our survival, they turn it on those people who threaten the government establishment. You like that? That's what was done in East Germany under the Stasi before the wall came down. Okay? So now what? Who's going to take down this electronic wall and save us? Mark Zuckerberg? Bill Gates? No, I don't think so. We have to tear the wall down. We don't have to say, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall. It's we have to tear down that wall. Maybe throw our computers in the garbage. Maybe throw our iPhones in the toilet. Maybe that'll tear down the wall. But here's the real question, because none of us are going to do that. We're all addicted. We're all like showing ourselves on vacations or drinking a Mai Tai. We think that's so interesting. Oh, yeah, here I am driving. Here's my hand on a steering wheel. Wow, you got beautiful nails, honey. Who does your nails? That's great. Or here's my butt. Great, no one else has one. Oh, great, here's my behind. Great, nobody else has one. That's the world we're living in. Who's going to throw away their iPhone when you got a world of idiots who look at those things? If they have 100% surveillance going on, how come, therefore, use logic, gone in the world, dead in the world, there is no logic. I'm lucky I still have a logical faculty left in my brain. I was raised in the age of Aristotelian logic. I studied mathematics. I studied Aristotelian logic. I can think mathematically. I can think logically. And the fact of the matter is, if they have 100% surveillance and we're still being attacked by radical Muslims right here in America, as we were 2 weeks ago from the attack, so who are they looking at? Then they tell you that they had them under surveillance. I love that one, like the one in San Bernardino from the two dolls, the Muslim dolls, who machine gun people. Then they come out and they say, well, we had them under surveillance. Did you? So why did you stop them? So who are they looking at? Who, you know, who's watching the watchers? Shall I quote that again? The answer is no one's watching them. They have become the evil, the pure evil. We gave it over willingly under George Bush. George Bush sold us a bill of goods. The Patriot Act would save us. The Patriot Act would make us safer. And we all went along with it. Oh, yeah. I got nothing to hide. Many of you still believe that. Oh, I got nothing to hide. What do I care if they're watching me take a bath? What do I care if some devious pervert at the NSA is watching me on the toilet? What do I care? Is some devious, low-life degenerate who belongs in a mental hospital spends 12 hours a day watching me walk around my house. What do I care? I got nothing to hide. You have a lot to hide, like your whole soul, for God's sakes. So here's the government now. 1984 was a primitive image, by the way. 1984, Big Brother is watching you. Remember that? Orwell, 1984, Big Brother had a listening device in everyone's house. And everyone went along with it, saying they felt safer because Big Brother was watching you. Like he was going to protect me. Big Brother was going to protect me. Some moron geek from NYU is going to protect you. He's going to protect you? They have no soul. They're soulless ghouls working inside those organizations. They have no soul, no spirit, no religion, no faith, no Americanism, zero. They are the enemy. So the fact of the matter is, how come they're not stopping the Muslims before they kill us? Yeah, they'll say Muslim. Every terror attack over the last year was a Muslim. Am I supposed to take Obama's lie, hook, line, and sinker? Yeah, every one of them. In fact, remember the Muslim gentleman? The Muslim gentleman who went on ran amok in the mall of Minneapolis? Are you a Muslim? Hack. 8 people he hacked with a knife. Till an off-duty sheriff shot him dead like the animal he was. He had to shoot him 3 times until he stopped moving. Oh, he was a Somali Muslim, right? Another immigrant, another fabulous immigrant. We're supposed to roll over now to how great immigrants are. You idiots, you. You morons, they're not your grandfather. They're not like your great-grandfather coming here to become an American and contribute to society and build a family. Okay, but you don't want to believe me. The rhetoric is too harsh. I get it. It scares you. I'll say it quietly. I'll say it in a nice Obama-esque way. I'll just be humorous about it. But some of us actually believe a nation is defined by its borders, language, and culture. Some of us actually believe that Obama is practicing a scorched earth policy before he leaves office of burning everything down. I don't mean literally. Are we one bad election for losing everything? Tell me, all you good progressives out there, is America not becoming a third world nation of terror? Check. Riots? Check. Mobs? Check. Chaos? Check. Has our Constitution been trampled by a divisive president? Check. Have progressive policies and open borders poisoned America? Check. Can the nation recover from Obama's scorched earth policies? Check. That's why the book is flying off the shelves. I want to get back to the issue of the Trump taxation thing. Now, for years I've been on the air screaming that Obama does not force Microsoft and Google to pay their fair share of taxes. They use every tax scheme that is legal. They use the issue of, let's say, setting up a company in Ireland. Then they use the triple Dutch method. Does Google pay their fair share of taxes? No. Does Microsoft pay their fair share of taxes? Not in my opinion. It's legal, but it bothers me. So then we wake up, and instead of covering the fact that these huge supporters of Barack Obama and the entire Democrat machine, Google, Facebook, Microsoft, don't pay their fair share of taxes because of tax laws that they follow to the letter of the law, they attack Trump on that issue, which of course is stupid. How about the erased 32,000 emails that the New York Times wouldn't cover? What do you think they're about? What is this cover-up about? To fool you and to distract you. Donald Trump's taxes, to drown out Hillary Clinton's crimes. What Trump did doesn't look good, but it's exactly the same as Microsoft and Google, which is reducing his taxes according to the letter of the law. But the evil ones at the New York crimes wants you to believe all of a sudden that using tax law legally is illegal now. But that what Hillary did, using her office as Secretary of State for bribes into the Clinton Foundation, is perfectly fine. Running a charity scam, perfectly fine. And so, my friends, this is what it's all about. No one's ever accused them of cheating on taxes. The very same Stasi inside the IRS who tried to destroy the conservative movement, first members of the Tea Party, and then conservative critics of Obama, the Stasi agents inside the IRS, okay, never went after the New York Times itself for their tax evasion. Perfectly legal, but tax evasion, if you're going to, you know, tar brush Trump with this thing, then tar brush the source of the information. Now, every American, Republican, Democrat, atheist, has a right to take legal deductions. Everyone has the right to carry forward tax losses. It's that simple. So what's the crime? I don't see one. But what about extorting $2 billion from foreign countries and foreign companies through so-called donations? What about $250,000 speaker fees? What about putting the State Department up for sale? What about giving out billions in contracts and grants to people who donate to you? That's not a crime. See, but you're not looking at the crime. We don't know what's coming next. But that's the story. And so, my friends, what's there to talk about? Let's move on already. We know it's propaganda and nothing more than propaganda. Be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Welcome to the show. Apparently, according to the NSA, CIA, FBI, LSMFT, the only people who are immune from prosecution and surveillance are those individuals who are planning to kill infidels, because it would be racist or considered ethnic profiling to pick them out. No, they should pick instead on a Jewish grandmother, 98, in a wheelchair and strip a bear at an airport, or an Irish nun, strip a bear at an airport, break her into tears, because they're not racist if they do that. What do you want to do about now? What do you want to do now? What do you want to do now? The world is melting down. Mobs, riots, chaos, terror, and nothing. And we're talking about Trump's taxes. Like, that's the biggest issue. She's destroyed laptops. Target everybody who's our enemy. You know, I was watching a lot of television over the weekend, the news shows. I was watching, like, RT. Oh, Russian propaganda. It can be, yeah. Well, I counter it because I watch American propaganda. CNN, ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, American propaganda channels, part of the government media complex, as I described so aptly in my speech in 1999 before the Commonwealth Club. Very important speech will be in my archives. Beware the government media complex. So I tune into the other side, so to speak, and I like to watch Japanese news television in English. And I find that the Russian channel, RT, is pretty bad. The paid-for shows are disgusting, horrible. Just garbage, really. They couldn't get on radio. They can't get a TV show. It's just garbage. But the news shows where there's panel discussion, some of these people are so analytically brilliant. You know, they speak like six languages. They actually think. They analyze. And the things they say are unique. And I was watching an entire show about the Syrian war and how the war drums are being beaten here by the neocons who want a war. And how John Kerry was caught off mic saying he'd love to go to war and bring a war against Russia, but even Obama doesn't want that. I couldn't believe what I was listening to. John Kerry's always been a complete suspicious character, one of the most evil, dangerous men in the history of American politics. Remember, he ran for the presidency once. And remember who he is. He's the one who threw his fake Purple Heart over the wall to show he was really anti-war. He knew that would be his road to the White House. A total snake. But even Obama knows war would be a catastrophe. It could lead to World War III. So Russia's sending more fighter jets there. Russia's sending up to 250,000 men there. And what are we going to do about this? Why is it our business? Tell me what our interests are in Syria. Tell me what our interests are in Syria. I cannot believe that all of the people who were pacifists and doves about Iraq and attack Bush about Iraq, attack Bush about Iraq, attack Bush about Iraq, attack Bush about Iraq, all of a sudden these chicken hawks are screaming for war with Russia. It's astounding. All those people who ripped Bush apart for war in Iraq are suddenly screaming, bomb Russia, bomb Russia, bomb Russia, bomb Russia, bomb Russia, bomb Russia, bomb Russia. All of a sudden they want war with Russia. Not a good thing. Russia is our natural ally in the war against radical Islam. Now that, my friends, begins the crux of the whole problem. Because I'm sorry to tell you that watching that show, they interviewed a man, a combat guy from Al-Nusra, one of the terrorist groups, who said that we have been trained and are getting weapons from the United States government. We need more of them. I said, oh God, it's everything we ever feared. Everything we ever feared. We're actually funding the terrorists in Syria under the guise of being the good Syrians. Where are the good Syrians in the dungarees that Anderson Cooper was in love with the iPhone in the back pocket like in Egypt? He ran over there as fast as he can get there. The minute he saw the young Egyptians with the iPhones in the back pocket, Anderson Cooper was on the case, ran over there, screaming like the idiot he is. There's no analysis. They have no logical faculties. The Andersons, Lester Dolt. They give him eyeglasses to make him look smarter. Remember Anderson had to get a pair of glasses to look smarter? I don't care what you wear. If you can't think and you have no logic, what's the point of being on the radio or television? Well, what's the point? Excuse me, it's America. Pardon me.
Savage.